The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Soccer to the Max. This time I did remember to hit record on the first intro. And... we have plenty of things to talk about here as some big news hit today concerning a possible Mexican superstar maybe heading to MLS. We've got some women's national team talk with She Believes Cup right around the corner, and the roster has been announced for that. We start our MLS season preview with 8 teams that we're going to be discussing here. And we also have some talk about the virtual assist referee system, or the VAR, with Howard Webb being appointed to help MLS get that going after the All-Star break. And so we're going to give our thoughts on what we think about that. But, just in case this is your first time joining, I want to let you know that if you like what you hear on this show, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, YouTube through the W2M Network, or just subscribe to W2M Network and you can get all the shows, some of them of which, you know, Eric is on This Week in the AFL show, and just, you know, a bunch of shows that I'm on as well. So I am your host, of course, Sean Garmer, with me here, Rachel McCrigger.
Hey, everybody.
And Eric Watkins.
Hello, everybody.
Last week it was the Hollows, and now we're just we're getting country here. So,
well, guys, you could say country. I think of it as paying homage to Keith Jackson, but it works either way, I guess.
Hey, when you can pay homage to a legendary announcer like that, can't hate there. So the big news kind of started before we were getting ready for this, and then all of a sudden this news breaks of, and this has been sort of rumbling around that Chicharito to MLS would be a thing. But LAFC have apparently put out a bid of $15 million for him to come in 2018 to play Major League Soccer. Talk about a big splash if he comes. Do you think he will come to LAFC, and is this the best spot for him?
I think he has a chance to come to LAFC. If not this coming season, then definitely next season, but I really want him to come just because I think I'm an idiot, by the way. I said this season or this coming season. They start next season. I'm sorry, lack of sleep. but I definitely want him to come because I think if the Dos Santoses stay in Los Angeles, I think that would be a really cool thing to have. You know, both Giovanni Dos Santos and Chicharito play on the Mexican national team, but having them be in their own little rivalry, their own little LA rivalry, I think that would be pretty neat.
Personally, not only do I want him to come here, but I'm applauding LAFC for making the right approach, setting up, as Rachel said, it would be a new twinge to the second incarnation of the LA Derby. And there's as a club, LAFC is showing they're doing right what Chivas USA didn't. And as far as Chicharito coming, I think MLS would be the best spot for him because had a great start to his career at Manchester United, fledgling, but it's kind of the same way continuing throughout European club football, but still kind of found another spark in continuing on with the Mexican national team. And playing to those kind of crowds, that kind of audience, and even with the level of play, I think Chicharito could have the potential to not only come here, but be well worth that $15 million.
Yeah, I think what you guys brought up, the whole thing about the derby, is just, I think this is great for LAFC understanding the base of people that you have in LA, all different kinds of people, but it's, you're going to have a large Mexican contingent that's going to want to go to these games. You bring in a national star for that country like Chicharito, you're already going to have people walking, just finding any way they can to get to that stadium because the dude has proven to be a draw when he is playing. I mean, and you definitely know you're going to get him scoring goals for you because he's always around the net and everything. I think it sets a tone for LAFC, just like what Atlanta has done this offseason by signing the guys they've been able to. You want to already out of the box say, this is what we're trying to do here. Send a message across the bow to the Galaxy and say, hey, not, it's not just you. You know, you might be the big star player here, but we're coming for you. I mean, do you think that, I mean, we've seen Liga MX, actually, their ratings have been going up and up here in the States. Every time I'm looking at ratings for Liga MX, they keep having bigger and bigger games, no matter what the channel, whether it's Univision Deportes even. Like, do you think that going from Europe, going from, Liga MX, all that, to MLS, do you think that it maybe hinders his place? I mean, is it going to help him as far as getting better at playing? I mean, is it going to hurt him as far as, you know, national team or anything like that, you think?
I don't know because I don't really know too much about Mexico's head coach to see if he has he has like a bias towards the MLS or not. I mean, I would say I don't think it's going to hurt him because, you know, like you look at all the players from Mexico that are in the MLS, like Giovanni Dos Santos is my go-to guy. You know, he's been playing in the MLS for a while now and he still gets called in. So yeah, I don't really think that's going to hurt him much.
I think it's really going to help him because, again, while he's very talented over in Europe, over the past few years, he's just been struggling and struggling to find any meaningful minutes with really some of the top-tier and big-name clubs. And with MLS, you're going to have an emerging club, easier access, more visibility to the Mexican coach, seeing what he can do. And this may lead to him continuing his career with the Mexican national team and possibly elevating it again. So I think this would be a huge plus.
Does this automatically put him as one of the top guys in the league immediately? Obviously, it depends on what kind of team is built around him. You know, because you can have him up there trying to score, but if nobody's getting him the ball, then it doesn't really matter. But I mean, are you saying he's already in that top level immediately as soon as he shows up, or
do you think
he's going to have some adjustment time?
Oh yeah, I think he will be, just because, you know, we've seen what he can do, you know, and it's not like people in the United States haven't seen Chicharito play. You know, the U.S. Mexican rivalry is pretty significant, and just I mean, he's going to be one of those guys that coaches are going to be like, okay, this is somebody we got to watch out for. This is somebody we got to, you know, maybe put double coverage on or whatever it be. Like you just said, it really all depends on what they build around him. But it's also, you know, he's definitely, like, just his name, you know, it's going to be like, watch out for Chicharito.
I mean, especially, and it goes around to something that Rachel brings up a lot, building a formation around someone. I think if LAFC can do a little bit towards building a good formation around him, then as is, he would only need to make very few adjustments. But then if you have a good formation around him, he wouldn't have to adjust whatsoever. Now, is he automatically going to come out, win the Golden Boot right away? No, that would be unrealistic, but it wouldn't surprise me, especially with his youth, that if he doesn't come close out of the gate.
I do think, there's always some kind of adjustment to MLS. We've seen it with a lot of the guys that come over here. You know, it takes them a little bit of time to figure out the league and how that goes. I mean, I think he's obviously going to have a little bit of an easier time because he's always around the goal, and it's more about, okay, if the ball's there, hit it in. It's not so much about him having to create or needing the ball at his feet to try to do something. So he might have a little bit of an easier time. But I think, obviously, the one thing I've seen with Chicharito is he needs a guy next to him. So whoever they have next to him, maybe doesn't need to be of the same quality, but needs to understand his role and say, okay, my main objective here is to make sure I know where Chicharito is and make sure he's in the best spot to receive the ball and put it in. Hopefully LAFC understands, like, let's not try to play him up top by himself because he seems to struggle that way.
Well, remember what I said last week. You need two strikers. He can be more powerful on one of them. Now, I'm going to spare everybody another, like, minute-long rant about it, but you get the idea.
Well, that being said, I think we should go ahead and move on to talking about this MLS season that's coming up. We're about 3 weeks away from it starting, I think. Yeah, so March 3rd is the start date, and we're going to talk about some of the teams here. Each two of us had three teams that we're covering, and Eric had two. Eric, you chose Orlando, your team to start out with. What's the big addition for Orlando? Do you have any concerns, and what do you think are their strengths heading into the season?
Well, they didn't really make too many splash moves in my eyes, and that's a good thing. Because with the team, they kept them young, and that was their strength. Because while Kaká, designated player, big name, especially for his long tenure, Brazil, both for club and country, relying on him to be the big producer and top man at 34, that's a little bit iffy, especially now that you've got Jason Christ coming in, taking charge full time. And that kind of leads into my concern. Christ came in late last season, led the club to its first win in over 2 months, and they finished the year 500, 3 wins, 3 losses, 2 draws. But now, how is he going to fit in, especially after the expectations at NYCFC? How is it going to be different? How is he going to be managed? And with this new team, young team, like, for example, I believe, like, midfielder Tommy Redding, he just got called up to the U.S. under-20 team for the CONCACAF tournament in U-20 World Cup qualifying, which is going to be tremendous experience. So, new head coach, new stadium, new atmosphere. That's really what I'm going to be looking for. How is this sort of regime change going to help the team gel? Last year, they didn't fare too well, especially with needing Adrian Heath gone, in so many words. But if they can get it together, and especially if they can get it together relatively quickly, it wouldn't shock me to see them sneak into the playoffs as a 5 or a 6 seed. But if not, then, well, another 8th or 9th place finish seems reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they have enough talent that they could possibly sneak in to the playoffs, but I agree with you. We've seen Jason Christ sometimes. He comes in and does well, but I think Jason Christ is one of those guys. He needs like a year to really be with the team and get his guys in there, and if he wants to play that, you know, diamond formation that he loved, do you think that they have the guys to even play that, or is he finally going to understand you might have to actually adjust what you're doing to the personnel you have around you?
That's going to be very hard telling, because I think the team could adjust to a diamond formation, but I don't necessarily think that that's the best for them. And you also hit the nail on the head. He's got to give more time to figure out this team, and OCSC as an organization has to give him time like Real Salt Lake did. I think they're going to be patient enough, but there's going to be a lot of soul-searching done this season in particular. So I think by the time you get to the All-Star break, somebody, either organization, Christ himself, the players, something is going to give. There might be a change in that. What change? I don't know.
I mean, for the people that maybe don't follow Orlando as much, when can people expect to see them in the new stadium?
They've already been sold the season tickets, so they are actually, if I remember the schedule right, opening up in their new stadium in a few weeks' time. Everything's set, everything's built, it looks fantastic, so from all I've seen, things are raring and ready to go.
All right, Eric. I mean, so you're saying just kind of on the fringe of playoffs, but not making it for Orlando.
Yeah, I would, if you had to give me a choice and say, hey, bet everything you have, what side of the red line are they going to end up on? I would say they would end up out of it. I mean, I want to believe, especially now that there's a new voice and some fresh air, but I gotta take another approach of give it a year, don't say anything, see what happens.
All right, Rachel, you had the MLS Cup champion Seattle Sounders. Are they repeating again?
I think a big question mark to Seattle, my team, since they started 2009, is the health of not just Clint Dempsey, but also their key players like Jordan Morris and Brad Evans, especially Brad Evans, because he's dealt with some injuries before. They lost Nelson Valdez, who came to the Sounders in 2015 for some time, and he came back for 2016, and they lost him. He was a big boost for them. They lost Eric Freeberg. Hercules Gomez retired. Andreas Ivanscheitz went to the Czech Republic for a club there, and they lost some other people, but not too many to really cry over. But Nelson Valdez is definitely someone that I'm crying over because of how good he was. He was a forward. He was an attacker. And another person they need to make sure stays healthy is Stefan Fry, their goalkeeper. He was invited to the U.S. January camp. He had to withdraw because of injury. LA Galaxy's Brian Rowe took over for him. So if they stay healthy, I could see them making a run for another MLS Cup. I think they're definitely going to make the playoffs. And the reason I say that is because even if Clint Dempsey is out, they got two really, really good forwards in trades. They got Harry Shipp from Montreal, and they got Will Bruin from the Houston Dynamo. Two very, very good forwards. Obviously, both of them aren't going to start because Jordan Morris, he's proven himself. He was the MLS Rookie of the Year, and he was definitely, even though it was his rookie year, he certainly did help carry the Sounders to an MLS Cup, So the Sounders should definitely be sending flowers to Werder Bremen in Germany, since Jordan Moores decided to not sign with them. But they're definitely going to make a run for the playoffs. MLS Cup is up in the air for a repeat. It all depends on the health of their players.
Do you see the Sounders really making any kind of run in Champions League? Considering all these forwards that you said they have and everything, I mean, they'd certainly be able to score points.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have a problem scoring points. I think they'll have a problem with how they set up scoring points. Like, they've got some good midfielders, but, like, I mean, the forwards outweigh the midfielders when you look at the talent. Champions League? Oh, I don't know. I guess that depends on, you know, the health again and how they draw. But I think one thing that they did in the offseason was give Brian Schmetzer another a contract extension. He was the guy who replaced Siggy Schmid. And I really like Brian Schmetzer. I think he's done a lot of really good things with the Sounders. He signed a couple of his Sounders 2 players. He used to be the USL coach. And I really like Brian. I think he can do a lot of good things in Seattle now that he has an off season under his belt and now that he has a year under his belt. But I see a lot of people, you know, tweeting at the Sounders, you know, there's pressure on Schmetzer. I don't think there should be pressure on him, honestly, because, like I said, this is his first full season as a coach. He came in under crazy circumstances and somehow managed to get a team to win the MLS Cup final in Toronto, which is also, should be added, not an easy place to play at, BMO Field.
Yeah, certainly not with the turf and everything. And I there's going to be pressure because it's Seattle, I think, just inherently. It's like saying, you know, it's like the Galaxy or any one of the, you're one of the big teams in MLS. You're going to have pressure to equal what these fans just saw you do. And, you know, those fans at that stadium are very loud and they will voice their opinions. So hopefully for the coach Schmetzer, he understands and they can equal that performance. But like you said, lots of things hang in the balance as far as health concerns and everything else. I mean, you know, Dempsey's not just for Seattle, but for, you know, U.S. national team and everything else. Are that all that's hinging on him? Do you feel like do they need to rely on him so much with what they've added? I mean, can he kind of just be, you know, 70% Dempsey and still contribute, or does he need to be the Clint Dempsey we know and remember?
I think because of the health concern, he needs to be 100%. I think he looks, you know, he looked good in the preseason game that they just played, and he just needs to come back to being comfortable playing. You know, he had that heart problem, and I'm glad he realized that he needed to step out of the game for a while. I don't think a lot of athletes do that nowadays. But Clint Dempsey did it, and I really commend him for it. And I would have him at 100% due to it's Clint Dempsey, and you don't want to risk anything. And he just has to be comfortable again.
Yeah, big things expected there in Seattle. And I guess I'm going to go ahead and talk about one of my teams here. I had Colorado Rapids, which, you know, they finished second in the Western Conference last year. And Paolo Mascherini at the reins again. They didn't really have to do much tinkering because the team did so well last year. They brought in Alan Gordon, free agent, because the one main weakness that they had last year was they were second worst, tied with Houston, but second worst in the league last year at scoring goals. Only 39 goals for the entire season. I mean, yeah, they have the defense and they have the goalkeepers to, you know, shut teams out. They shut teams out 13 times out of 34 last year. But, I mean, you got to be able to score more than the Rapids did. So you're hoping that with Alan Gordon being able to be great on set pieces and being able to kind of just be around goal and put things in, that helps kind of alleviate things. You know, because Kevin Doyle wound up playing like behind in the number 10 role, and he's supposed to be one of your strikers. You know, and they brought in a guy from Switzerland, Gashi. He wound up leading the team in goals with 9. So do you have him for the whole year? You have Alan Gordon the whole year. Hopefully that balanced things out. Because what Colorado does is they stack the midfield. They got a lot of great midfielders, and they'll kind of keep possession and get things going that way, and then they have the defense to kind of make sure that they keep the ball. So they just got to get it in the final third going for Colorado. You know, and then you got the question of Tim Howard. Is he going to be Tim Howard again? Or is, you know, now that you're healthy and have the whole season, or is he going to have some injuries and have problems? And then you got to have Zach McMath in there, who he did great. He was fine. They won 52% of their games when McMath was in there. They actually, I think they played the same amount. They both played 17 games. And, you know, McMath actually was better than Howard. So you have to wonder, you're paying him that DP money. Is he going to be that DP player? I kind of see that Colorado could at least still get the playoffs. I wonder if things are going to come together for them enough with the stacked Western Conference to be able to get to the same spot they did last season, which they got to the Western Conference Finals and lose to Seattle. I feel like they can get past the knockout round, but they'll probably lose or that first round of the playoffs, but they'll lose in the next one. Just because I feel like one of the, you know, some of the bolstering that some of the other Western Conference teams did will probably knock them out earlier. So we move on from our first round of previews to talking about the She Believes Cup, which this starts in March 1st and then goes on through that first week of March. You have, is it France, England, and Germany that the U.S. are playing, right?
Yep.
So Joe Ellis names the team, the 25 players. Interesting that no Megan Rapinoe, after Grant Wall had tweeted that she was ready for selection. Jill Ellis says she's still coming back from that ACL tear in 2015. Some young players on here as well. Rachel, what do you think?
I'm not sure how I feel about Rapinoe being left off. I really am not a fan that she was left off, honestly. I'm going to just nod my head and say, okay, I trust Jill Ellis's judgment. Somebody I really like that's on this roster is Jane Campbell. Jane Campbell, she's a goalkeeper. I'm honestly, everyone overhypes Ashlyn Harris. Like, I think she's a good goalkeeper. I don't think she's as great as everyone says. I think Jane Campbell can go in there and give her and Alyssa Nair a run for their money when it comes to when it comes to a competition. I like Rose Lavelle. She was drafted number one overall by the Boston Breakers. She was fantastic in college. I really liked her. I like that Casey Short is getting another shot with the defenders. Something that kind of worries me is that Kelly O'Hara is still mixed in with those defenders. I'm a little biased here because I like Allie Krieger. She's my favorite player, but I think she's a better defender than Kelly O'Hara is. And lately, Ellis liked to start O'Hara over Krieger, but I think Allie Krieger should be starting over O'Hara. She did in the World Cup, and I think she did. She was part of that, you know, the secretaries of defense: her, Julie Johnston, Klingenberg, and Becky Sauerbrunn. In the midfield, I really like the addition of Sarah Killian from Sky Blue FC. I'm glad that these rosters are starting to look a little bit different. Normally, Ellis would just call in the same players. Now she's giving all these other players a shot. Sarah Killian, Lynn Williams. She's bringing Amy Rodriguez back. Amy Rodriguez had, I believe she had a girl. Don't quote me on that, but she had a child, and now she's back. I was kind of shocked to see Sydney LaRue off the roster still, but, you know, there's tough competition, and Sidney LaRue hasn't played for a while, so I can understand that. Mallory Pugh is fighting some injuries, but it's good to see her back. I think it's a little odd that I don't think it's odd that Crystal Dunn and Alex Morgan are back, but I just think it's odd that they went to their new clubs. Crystal Dunn plays now in England with Chelsea Ladies, and Alex Morgan plays in France with Lyon. And they went to their clubs, they came back to the U.S., and then they went back to their clubs. They're back in the U.S., and, you know, it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Even the guys don't do that much switching around. Like, they have a nice break in between, you know, where they stay at their clubs for a long period of time, or they stay with the national team for a long period of time. But somebody that I really wish Ellis would quit ignoring is Gina Lewandowski. Don't let the last name fool you. She's actually not related to Bayern Munich's Robert Lewandowski, but she does play for Bayern Munich's women's team. She's a great defender. I think in the last calendar year, Ellis has called her in one time, but I think Ellis loves her domestic-based players. She loves bringing in players from the NWSL, and she really tends to ignore those German Bundesliga, ladies Bundesliga players, and I don't think she should really be ignoring Gina Lewandowski. I think she's a great defender, and I think she could give somebody like Julie Johnston or even Ali Krieger a run for their money for their starting role. But overall, I think the roster's good. It kind of does bring up a lot of questions. I'm sure we'll get to this, because a certain goalkeeper was not added on the roster, whose suspension is up on the 22nd. But we'll get to that later.
And what do you think about, I don't know how much you know about her, but adding a 16-year-old and Brianna Pinto in here too, like, just, you know.
It doesn't shock me, because Ellis loves bringing in these young kids. She did it with Mallory Pugh. She brought Ashley Sanchez in for a while. Ashley Sanchez then went back to her U20, U21 team. You know, she captained the team during their World Cup. She isn't going to give this girl much playing time, but she is going to give her the experience of being on this national team. Obviously, she's good enough. And, I mean, she's not going to be starting games. She'll honestly be very lucky if she can get her first cap during the She Believes Cup, just because of how competitive England, France, and Germany are. But to have the opportunity to go in and train, she did this with Rose Lavelle too, and Sammy Mewis. She's always going to bring in these young kids. That's Jill Ellis right now. She has the mindset of going younger, but also mixing in those players from the 2015 World Cup. I like it, but I don't think she's going to see much action on the field.
Eric, you have anything here you want to say?
I mean, looking at the roster, I see a lot of where Rachel's coming from, and doing a little bit of research, I wanted to ask about this. Do you think because of the domestic schedule and with the nature of the differences in the women's national team calendar as compared to the men's, do you see this as an extra case to where Ellis would be going a bit more experimental with her lineup because she can afford to?
Maybe. That's why I can see Jane Campbell starting. That's why I can see Casey Short starting, Rose Lavelle starting. But I also don't think she quote-unquote can, because they want to win the She Believes Cup. You know, they won it last year. They're going to want to win it again. And last year, it wasn't like a walk in the park. They had some pretty close games. Like, I think they won against Germany 1-0. Or some team they won 1-0. I think it was France that they blew away. But I think they had close games with England and Germany. I see it as a more experimental thing when it comes to training. But I think when it comes to any experiment, I think she needs to wrap up the goalkeeper experiment. If She Who Shall Not Be Named, Hope Solo, is not going to be coming back to the national team. You've got to pick between Harris, Nahir, and Campbell. And Campbell's even a tricky one because, you know, she just got drafted. Who knows if she's going to start for the Houston Dash? She had a great collegiate career with Stanford, I believe she played for. But, you know, is she going to start for the Houston Dash? I don't know. I don't think anyone besides the Houston Dash coaches know. So I think that needs to be wrapped up, that whole goalkeeper scenario. I see Jill Ellis, you know, going into her training, finding a goalkeeper, and starting her for all three matches. I can't see her going Campbell, Harris, Nahir for all three matches, like have them start different times. If she does, I don't know how I'll feel about it. I'll get over it, but if, like I said, if She Who Shall Not Be Named isn't coming back, then you got to pick somebody.
I know that's going to be a bit of an extra drama, and if this tournament really is another must-win, I have to agree. You can't do too much tinkering just because you're at a convenient place in your World Cup cycle. This, you got to prepare and go gung-ho, so... Okay, I'm going to have to pay a little bit extra attention to this one now.
I don't know. I mean, I do think that not being in the World Cup Olympic years does afford her the ability to bring in some of this talent, though. I think, you know, you can bring some of these, you know, younger kids in and they don't play and it doesn't really matter. You know, they just got in there and got experience. And, you know, I don't know that she made any decision other than the Megan Rapinoe decision. It's like, okay, is any of this, like, totally controversial? I mean, so if they go out there and they win or they at least get close, I don't really think it's that big a deal if they don't win, as long as they're competitive and, you know, you see something a little bit different from them. Are they going to play that 3-5-2, you know, which that's been a talk about from a lot of people of, okay, if you're going to play a 3-5-2 against these smaller countries, you should be able to say, okay, we're going to experiment completely and play it against Germany and England and France too, you know? So
I can see it like not being such a big deal, but I can also see it as being a big deal because people are so used to this team winning. Like, it was devastating for people when they, you know, didn't even make the semifinals of the Olympics. You know, people were really devastated about that. And while this tournament isn't as big as it can be, you know, granted it's in its second year, I think when you look at the teams they're going against and how competitive those teams are and how those teams were these people were the ones that made the semifinals or what have you. You know, Germany won the Olympics, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that's right. But I think when you look at that, it's just like, all right, they need to go in and win to make up for their, shall I say, dismal Olympics performance.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to have that good showing, right? Like, you want to say, okay, this is behind us, let's come out here and show everybody that, you know, the U.S. is fine, don't panic or whatever. But, you know, I still think people are going to be able to put it into perspective, too, of it's just the She Believes Cup. It's not a major competition or whatever.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking, because you have Germany, as Rachel said, Olympic champions, plus all three of these teams, they have their Euros coming up. All three of them qualified, and those matches start in July, so they're going to be seeing this as some very good preparation for that tournament. So I'm just wondering, well, given that, how is the U.S. going to approach it? So it's, again, this is something that's always good for the curious out there.
So, I mean, we kind of danced around it here, but, you know, Hope Solo, in fact, has signed on with a production company because she doesn't know if she's going to be playing or not, to produce, I forgot the name of the show now, but she, it's a show that was on Fox Sports last year, and they canceled it, and I think she's trying to bring it back or whatever. I think it's a show about, like, soccer. It's like a fitness show or something like that, but it's, like, soccer players. So, yeah, she, whatever that is. But right now, she's running from that. Do what?
She needs to quit running her mouth. That's the problem.
Yeah, so she runs her mouth again after, you know, being suspended because she called the Swedish team coward.
Because she ran her mouth.
Yeah.
Clearly, she's learned nothing.
Like, if nothing. Back to the
so for the people who don't know, what was it that she said this time?
She said that they were cowards because they played a more defensive game towards the end of the game.
Wow, but didn't she say something, like, on 60 Minutes, I think?
Oh, yeah, she, like, smacked down Jill Ellis and called her, like, the worst coach or something to that standard.
Oh, dear Lord.
Then she was smacking down on Pia Sundhage, too, who used to be the coach of the national team. She's just she's a mess.
I mean, I get her accolades and her performances, even with the story, doing sit-ups in her driveway because she partied too hard with the Olympics ahead of appearing in the ESPN issue, but that was cool then, but what you do on the pitch only takes you so far. If you're going to be a certain way, people are going to treat you a certain way and then ignore you. And this goes across the board, men's or women's sports. I'll even give you an example I talked about. Baseball player Albert Bell. 50 home runs and 50 doubles in a season, but he's not in the Hall of Fame because he had a propensity for bashing teammate stereos in the clubhouse. So, no matter what you do, even if you are...
Well, didn't he also do steroids and all that?
I think there were some accusations about that, too. I'd have to dig deeper into that. So, yes, I'll admit that's another factor. But if you're someone who, okay, you'll have an epic shutout streak, but you'll go ahead, make fun of the host country, the Olympics, with the whole mask and bug spray.
Zika!
Yeah, and then... And then because you lose what was actually a very well-played match, and with Pia Sundhage going against the team that she coached, a keeper that she coached, you have to think she knew a lot of her tactics, and she did. So then because it ends the way it did, you call the team cowards for parking the bus, which... Tactically, it's very understandable, and then you slam the coaches? Sorry, no. Now, granted, on other shows, I would use names for these sort of people, but I'm going to be nice.
I mean, Hope's also been one of the kind of front runners of trying to really get this new CBA done for the women, which U.S. Soccer is trying to get that done before the She Believes Cup, too. They're kind of talking, but nothing's really been going on. Obviously, U.S. Soccer is going to want to say that they've been talking because this looks bad on them. Where do you guys kind of land on this? Obviously, they deserve better pay, but
absolutely.
How much is too much, I guess?
Just make them equal with the men. Simple as that. But I think... I mean, yes, yeah, I'm so for that they deserve equal pay and that what they're fighting for is the right thing. I think it's great. But they also have to look and see how fortunate that they really are, because I mentioned this, I think, in our first podcast. You've got people from Haiti and, like, the Dominican Republic and all these other countries that don't get paid a single dime to play these games. Like, they had a hard time. I remember when Australia couldn't play an international game. They had Haiti. I think they played in Detroit. And Haiti had such a hard time getting to Detroit because they just didn't have the money to get there. And it's, I mean, I love that they're fighting for equal rights, and I'm all for it, but I think you have to go on the outside, too, and see, like, it's not just you. It's a whole nother big situation. It is, you know, just women's soccer in general. It's not just them. This is a big problem around the world.
Yeah, and it's even starting to go into other aspects of soccer as well. Look in Brazil. I spoke about famed stadiums. The Maracanã, thanks to a lot of bills being due by the Olympics, it was even built for the 1950 World Cup. Grass isn't growing. It's not being tended to. It's been vandalized, broken windows, this and that. So if you've got countries that can't even keep their men's game in their hallowed grounds capable, imagine how much they're willing to throw away their women's game. So
yeah, but I mean, how much of that wouldn't be happening if Brazil wouldn't be going through the political strife that they're going through? I mean,
well, part of that, trust me, with political stuff, come on, soccer is their religion. Let's be real. So I'm not saying it's not a non-factor, but it's not a major factor. Because, I mean, think back to the days when Pelé flew to a country and they even stopped the Civil War just so he could have a good match and get away safely.
True. Do you guys think that they're actually, you know, it's one thing to say that they deserve it, but is U.S. soccer going to actually give them this?
My gut's telling me no. They should, but with the brain trust at U.S. soccer, no, I don't see it happening.
I want to say yes, but I really do applaud their efforts, and I love that they're fighting for this, but again, like Eric said, just the people in charge at U.S. soccer, I don't think so. I don't want that to be true, but you know, what more, you know?
Right. And I mean, I think that you guys were talking about, it's a bigger issue, but sometimes you need to have that step be taken, right? Somebody's got to get the equal pay first in order for other countries to go, hey, you see what the US women are doing? They're paying them equally. Why can't we get that? You know,
squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Right. And I mean, I think, and always the U.S. women have the most leverage, right? Because the U.S. men don't do anywhere near
as
the
good
great things the U.S. women do. So, I mean, if there's one country that can ask for this and you can say deserve it, it's the U.S. You know, I think Germany could as well, obviously, but it's very few the amount that you could say, okay, well, the women's team is better than the men's team. And I think definitely just for what they have to do, you got to pay them equally on some kind of level because, you know, they're not getting any kind of equal pay like that on the club level. So you got to pay them somewhere on the national level, you know? What message are you sending to these little girls that want to play youth soccer and tell them, hey, I'm sorry, just because you're a girl, you're not going to get paid what your brother might if he makes the U.S. team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the fact that Germany has a little bit of leverage with their recent history, but the U.S. and all of the Women's World Cups never finished worse than third. Ever. Same amount of time, same span, same number of tournaments. The men have lost all three matches twice, and have only even once gotten to the quarterfinals. That alone sends a message.
I mean, we should be fair in that the women's game in the U.S. advanced much faster here than the men's game in the U.S. advanced here. So,
well, but all the more reason for on a national team level to have that equal pay. I think if anything, because the women's game exploded as much as it did, do you want that to not only plateau but decline? Or do you want to keep that train rolling?
I mean, do you think that would happen though, if they say, okay, we're not equally paying you, we're going to have a lot of the women say, okay, well, we're not playing?
It wouldn't surprise me, especially with this climate and everybody having some reason to protest every week. Why not U.S. women's soccer? Get that on really as big of a stage as it could be.
What do you think, Rachel? You think you'll have...
I don't think it would surprise me. I mean... I just pay them, damn it.
Right?
Yeah.
Write a check and make it all go away.
Exactly. Just make it all go away. Speaking of getting paid, Carly Lloyd may be looking to get paid by Manchester City.
Woo!
You think we actually see her go there? And, you know, you were talking about Joe Ellis and the domestic situation.
Yeah,
is she really going to be upset about that? Like, I mean, I don't understand why she's getting more money. Like, she's paying in a better...
I don't think Jill's going to get upset. I think Jill's just going to be like, come on, man. Because she wasn't thrilled when Crystal Dunn went to Chelsea Ladies, and she really wasn't that thrilled when Alex Morgan decided to go to Lyon. But I mean, they're gonna do better there. I mean, why would you take them away from a better opportunity?
And even on the exposure aspect, look what this could potentially do, not just for women's soccer in England, but the UEFA Women's Champions League. Now you're potentially infusing this level of talent into what was already a very successfully growing tournament with the new setup. Now you get this in the mix. Imagine how much, especially both short-term and in a couple of years' time, what this level could mean and what they could do with that tournament overall.
Yeah, true. I mean, honestly, too, it's just thinking about sometimes you just want a new opportunity, right? Sometimes you just want a new thing to do. It's not always that you want to leave or about the money. It's just about, okay, well, Carly Lloyd's played here for so long. She's, you know, still going to be with the national team. It's not like she's just leaving. Just go for a better opportunity and get in a different experience of playing in England and getting to play with, you know, better talent. All right. So, is the U.S. going to win the SeaWorld Leaves Cup?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say yes as well. I think
penalty kicks for Germany.
Yeah, penalty kicks again. So let's move back to the MLS preview here and go in on our second round of teams. Eric, you have DC United. What do you see from DC for 2017?
Okay, if I could find a convenient word that started with the letter C, I would, but there's definitely some discombobulation going on. Now, there's recent talks that Thursday they're going to finalize the last hurdles of building their new stadium, which I will save the people another rant about. why things don't happen with RFK, but that'll open up some very deep wounds, so I'll leave that alone. And especially the fact that they would wind up playing as many as 12 away games to start the 2018 season if things get a go-ahead. Again, a lot of wounds. But what I observed from DC United, they had arguably one of their biggest losses, especially from an offensive standpoint, from Alvaro Saborio, who was originally going to move to Deportivo Saprissa in Costa Rica, but decided to just retire altogether. That was, give or take, 10% of their goal-scoring output from last season gone. Yes, they shored up the offensive side of the ball with signing Luciano Acosta. They had him on loan from Boca Juniors, signed him to a full-term deal. Fantastic, but I would have to see how he pairs with the likes of a Sebastian Letou to see if they could still generate that same level of firepower. Now, offensively, they were fine. Only shut out 7 times. Scored twice, at least twice, 18 times. Now, listen to some of these statistics. 4th most shots in MLS last year. 6th most on target, 5th most goals. Now, even if they decide to hang Letou back or Costa back and use a sort of a 4-5-1, as long as you have a solid attacking midfield, that would be just fine. But at the same time, they, as good as their offense was, their defense was terrible. In 34 MLS matches, 34, they only had 8 clean sheets. 8. Think about that now. Yes, yeah, yes. Their goaltenders or their goalkeepers hurt, had to sign, but defensively, you can't go along scoring 53 goals but allowing 47. Plus, discipline. I mean, they, and oddly enough, with the two teams I picked, DC and Orlando were the only two teams in MLS that had 700 disciplinary points. Now, as a frame of reference, every red card is 3, yellow cards are 1, fouls are 1. And the fact that they had, they committed the most fouls, over 500, 64 yellow cards, and they were offsides more than 100 times. Something has got to be shored up. I mean, the issues with your coach stepping onto the field and being suspended and fined by the club. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there needs to be another change in that respect, but all of the good they have can easily be washed away. So, if I had to pick where they would go, I'd say, if they can keep their offense, if they can just stay inside their own heads and shore more their defense, they could be up there and potentially have a first round bye come playoff time. And if they don't have some sort of collapse, it wouldn't surprise me that, again, with all this, they could go late August, September, maybe with some outside hype as a supporter shield, but if they can't get it together and they can't stay out of trouble, then back to the fringes of playoffs that they go.
And you said that you found something interesting with their new stadium and what's going on with that.
Yes, this Thursday they have the meeting with the DC Council. They are getting all their P's and Q's together the last couple of hurdles as far... They have the environment. They've already... I believe they've already broken ground or started to. Well, they've already cleared out the land and could break ground. And they've already sold out a lot of their suites, a lot of season tickets. But if they have traffic concerns and concerns about where the neighborhood's going to be, if they can be resolved, they can break ground, have it ready for 2018. Now, they wouldn't be ready at the start of the season, and United is prepared to play as many as I said earlier, 12 matches away and debut the stadium after the World Cup break. But the sooner they want to get in, which is most likely June, the better. And personally, I get that RFK has seen better days, and I get that attendance is in the toilet, but I would still like to see them at least look at the option, and I hope that they did thoroughly, of investing money to make RFK suitable rather than just going ahead and going full steam on building this new one at Bayonet Point right next to Nationals Park.
All right, Rachel, you have the MLS Cup for runner-ups in Toronto FC.
Toronto. Can we all just take a minute to appreciate Michael Bradley's sweet, sweet message to Toronto on Instagram after they lost? Speaking of which, NFL players, excluding Matt Ryan, though, because he is awesome, but Cam Newton and other, like, sore losers, that's how you do it, friends. So Toronto really didn't do much in terms of off-season moves. Their head coach, you know, he recently just said, you know, we've been quiet this off-season thus far, but that's a good thing. You know, we'll make noise later. That's Greg Vanney that said that. So really, they haven't done much. The one big person, though, the big name that they lost is Will Johnson. Will Johnson left to go to Eric's Orlando City SC, signed a 2-year contract, and it was quiet at first with Will Johnson leaving, but then he went and pulled a Hope Solo and decided to run his mouth a little bit and kind of dissed Greg Vanney, dissed Toronto FC, dissed a lot of the designated players. And now he's just like, he said he's sorry, and now I guess he's just focusing on his season with Orlando City. So bye-bye, Will Johnson. They also lost a couple other people, Clement Simonian, Chris Manella, Danielle Lovitz, Quillen Roberts, and Josh Williams. And they had a lot of people returning, although they had quite a scare during the MLS expansion draft. I believe it was the Minnesota United. They grabbed Clint Irwin, their goalkeeper, but then Toronto traded back for him, and all of the craziness was settled. But a lot of big names are coming back, like Drew Moore, Toussaint Ricketts. They re-signed Ashton Morgan. They had a long and bumpy road when it came to signing Benoit Cheroux, which he was one of the guys who scored a game winner during the playoffs. I think it was during their semifinal game he scored the game winner. But he's 35 years old, but he's still kicking it out there. And he is back this season. And then they didn't have to worry about Justin Morrow, Michael Bradley, or Josie Altidore because they're still under contract. But a little bit of a distraction during the offseason for Toronto FC was Sebastian Giovinco. He was saying for a while that, you know, maybe he could go to China. It was his, I think it was his agent that was starting all of these rumors, like, oh, maybe it'd be a good idea if he went to China and played some footy. But no, he insists he's happy in Toronto. He said he wants to win a championship with them. And honestly, with the way that their roster is, like I said, the only person that they've lost that's really, like, oh gosh, they lost, is Will Johnson. So I could see them making another run at the MLS Cup playoffs. I definitely see them going back to the playoffs. Don't know how far, but they just need to start practicing their corner kicks again.
So I've got my FC Dallas squad, which I don't know how on earth this happens in MLS. I feel like Dallas just quietly went and just retooled and said, all right, we're just going to keep getting more players, and you're going to figure out, I don't know how you're going to figure out how to stop us, because Mauro Diaz gets hurt, which is one of the main reasons they lost to Seattle the way they did, because he got hurt right in December. Well, it's not the first time Mauro Diaz has been hurt. So what do they go do? They go get Javier Morales to, you know, make sure that if he gets hurt again, oh, it's okay. We can just stick Javier Morales in there. And then, of course, Fernando Cavalho just keeps chalking it up with the Latin American talent, going and getting Carlos Cermeño from Venezuela, he's on loan. Christian Coleman from Paraguay, he's also a loanee. And then they find David Ferreira's son, Jesus Ferreira, who's already scoring ridiculous goals. And he's 16, by the way. And, you know, so, you know, that kid's going to be playing for a while. And, I mean, they went and re-signed Ativa Harris, kept Matt Hedges. So the defense is fine the way it was. I mean, they got Walker Zimmerman. I mean, I don't really know, other than just getting completely injury ravaged, how Dallas doesn't wind up exactly where they were and progress to where they probably felt they should have been, which is MLS Cup. I mean, the Kellen Acosta being able to grow and get so much better with Dallas has helped them. Yeah, they lost Zach Lloyd in the expansion draft, but I mean, I don't want to keep gushing about the team, but it's just, it's really hard for me to see any kind of weakness on this team. It's one of the most complete teams in MLS, honestly. It's all about managing the season and getting hot at the right time, and if they can do that and avoid crazy injuries, I think they'll be just fine. Definitely should be making the playoffs again, because you know they're going to outscore you in bunches. And, if they don't get far in the playoffs, it's because of some just really, you know, Mauro Diaz or Morales. Perhaps Morales doesn't, he shows his age a bit, which I could see happening. He doesn't play up to the Javier Morales, you know, standard. And, Mauro Diaz doesn't come back fully like Mauro Diaz again. And so they have a problem at that number 10 spot and can't play the same way that they're used to playing. But I think it's going to be one of these. Dallas should be one of the top teams in the league without question, considering all this talent they have. Sometimes the talent doesn't come together, so that's always a possibility. But, I mean, anything less than, I think, a conference finals for Dallas, you got to be disappointed if that's your squad at this point. So we move on to the last thing, unless, you know, I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that or whatever, but, I mean,
wait till I see Seattle.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, I mean, Seattle's always been their hurdle, right? I mean, but
I'm like waiting to see our tweets, though, Sean. Like, you and I, like, Eric's gonna have to be the peacekeeper, because you and I are just gonna be like trash talking the whole time.
Oh yeah, wait till.
And then
I'm good at peacekeeping. Like a draw.
We'll have to. I don't know. Maybe make some kind of wager or something. You know.
Oh boy.
Hey, now we're talking.
I don't know, maybe not money. Like, somebody has to do something silly or whatever if the other team loses, or gotta wear the...
Now we're really talking.
Gotta have the other team's logo as your profile for a while or something. I don't know.
I'll have to think about that for sure.
But,
sounds like I have to put my negotiating suit on again.
Right? Let's get that going. But there was an interesting decision made by MLS this week. Howard Webb, the only referee ever to be able to officiate a Champions League final and a World Cup final in the same year in 2010, is going to be the guy in charge of kind of instituting the virtual assistant referee, the VAR system for MLS, which is going to take effect after the All-Star game and has been used in USL already before for, like, you know, special exhibition games and whatnot. I've seen this in practice, and it looks, as long as the referees can kind of keep it to a minimum of not taking too much time, I think it can work, but there's always the possibility that it just creates more problems. Where do you guys kind of stand on this and having some kind of assistant, or having, like, basically, you know, what the NFL has where New York is looking at something and telling you, hey, you need to look at this again, or, you know, like the system hockey has or college football. Do you like this being in soccer, or do you say, oh, man, it's taking away from the game? This is one of those games where I just don't like this.
Personally, if it can be kept as little intrusive as possible, I like it. Because in reading the story and seeing how what happened in the match between Orlando City B and New York Red Bulls 2, how it was able to change the outcome of the game, especially leading to cards, I think it would be better, because yes, you'll still have that inherent questioning of calls, but there's more and more opportunity of getting calls right. I'm a big fan of that. I see it, hockey, college football, NFL, rugby with the television match official. I see it in all kinds of different ways, and how they're having it set up to where, similar to the NFL doing it, where the referee almost looks like a tablet, and you have a couple officials scanning the pitch from upstairs. I think this can be done well, and it's something I could get used to.
What do you think, Rachel? Do you like the use of replay?
I do, but I think one of the reasons, well, this is definitely the reason why I love this sport so much, is because it's so fast-paced and that there's, like, very little interruptions. So, like, I mean, I like that it's used, and I loved Eric's example because I remember, like, seeing that game. I remember, you know, I write about the Riverhounds, so I was at the Riverhounds game while that happened, and the Riverhounds PR guy, my friend Anthony, was like, oh, you guys should check this out. Like, look what's going on right here. And we were all, like, huddled around his computer screen while the Hounds were outside playing their game. But I like the idea, but I don't want it to be, like, every time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is a worry about that, like, how many times is this going to be? It's only supposed to be for, like, penalties, fouls that the referee already considers, like, red card possibility, you know, those kinds of, like, very controversial decisions that can change the game or whatever. Even though in that USL game, when he looked back at a foul, he went ahead and gave one of the guys a yellow card, and then he got a second yellow and got sent off, and Orlando wound up with 9 players in that game because they already had a guy sent off on a penalty foul that he only gave a yellow, and then he decided to send him off. Like, you know, those are always controversial things, right? Like, you're deciding that this penalty wasn't egregious enough called on the field okay, well, you're going to go look at a, you know, a camera, which, I mean, looking at the setup that they have, it literally does have almost every angle covered. But, man, like, to go back and say, okay, well, now I'm just going to give you a red card and he's gone, like, that's a rough decision. Like, you know, imagine if, you know, what if the NFL started deciding, okay, we're going to put certain penalties under the jurisdiction of replay. I mean, how much controversy that would cause.
What, if they do it right, not really. CFL does it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. It's just sometimes, you know, referees are kind of weird sometimes. Like, you know, one referee will think that's a red card and one won't. And you'll look at it and go, oh my God, that was ridiculous. The guy took him out from behind, stomped on him. I mean, how is that not a red? Or they call a red and then, you know, you got 5 minutes and that completely changes the game. I mean, these decisions really do change the game. Deciding that that penalty was a penalty or taking away the penalty is a big deal. You know, so you're taking away the human error, but you can also cause some more issues if the human error is actually wrong.
And this is why I say have it closer to how they do it in rugby. Because how it goes in rugby, if the referee sees something, be it scoring a try or no, or some sort of with issues with tackling, whatever, they'll blow the whistle, stop the clock, and then go immediately up to the official and say, hey, this is what I saw. What did you see? What should be the appropriate punishment? And I think if you have sort of that system to where, yes, you see something, but before you make a decision, you kind of confer with the referee as well as the other linesman on the pitch, then you make the decision. Well, then you can go back and say, oh, well, it should have been this, it should have been that, rather than being criticized for making a decision and then changing the decision. So there's still room for both human error and getting it right if you do it that way.
I think people that I've seen people complain that, oh my God, it's going to stop play too much, whatever. On these decisions anyway, they always stop play. Like, a penalty, how many times does the guy get in the ref's face and moan and complain, and then they stand around and figure out if it's a penalty or not, or what card he's going to get? And, like, by the time you do all that, he can look at the camera and go, okay, that was a penalty. Like, I don't understand what the big deal is with the, oh my God, the play's going to stop, it's too much, you know. All these big-time decisions, they take up too much. That's why I don't understand why on stuff like that, like on penalty decisions, like, why can't you just stop the clock? Like, you know, it's instead of...
Absolutely.
like, you know they're going to stand around and wait a while. Like, why can't you just stop the clock? Why does it have to keep going? And then you got to figure out how much time you got to put back on later. And, you know, I don't understand that point, but...
Okay, people may hate me for this, but can we go either, well, it's two ways. Go back to what the old NASL did and do what college soccer and the NCAA does. Can you go back to the countdown clock and just give the referees discretion to stop it if they need to? I mean, would that really be that terrible?
Oh, you mean the clock that goes to zero instead of...
Uh-huh.
To 45?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see what the... You know, I guess it's such a soccer traditionalist thing that it's always 45 and then plus one or whatever, but...
Yeah, NASL had it up until the bitter end in the early 80s. MLS started it their first few years. NCAA still does it, and they have specific provisions where the referee can blow the whistle, call time off within the last minute of each half. I mean, at the very least, try it out. Because, yes, you have your traditionalists, but at the same time, you have a new cycle of fans, new generations of fans coming in, and it wouldn't be, at least in my mind, not that terrible.
Well, Rachel, I mean, you know, with all the advancements that MLS has tried to make and try to become more like the world game, I feel like that would be one of those things that, you know, let's say somebody watching on Sky Sports goes on those and goes, what? Why is this clock going to zero?
I don't know. I really don't have, like, a good answer for this because, honestly, it doesn't really bother me. Just play the game.
Fair enough.
I'm pretty simple when it comes to the logistics.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I guess, I mean, with IFAB and FIFA looking at MLS to see how we do things different, their logistical issues coming up with the next few World Cups, and they're saying, well, maybe we can do this, or maybe see these rules or these rules, it's like, can't we all just get along? Can't we all just have a bigger meeting of the minds and make a few subtle changes if we're going to go this far and keep it the global game but make everybody happy?
Well, you know, that would mean that MLS would finally have to get on the international calendar, and they're not going to do that, so.
Well, there's actually been talks about the international calendar shifting to more of an MLS schedule. Especially,
really?
Yes, especially with the whole situation and potential devastation that is 2022 creeping up on us.
Don't remind me of that.
Yeah.
I mean, as cool as it is to think about, oh, I'm going to be watching the World Cup during Christmas or something, like, it's just so wrong. It's just
look,
so wrong.
If they're not going to give it to another country, which they should do, and I still think they should find something with 2018, but as for where we are time-wise, I'll save that for another show. But if they're not going to do that, they don't have a choice. They really don't. I mean,
the season ends in December now instead of the season ends in May?
Pretty much, and that way you don't play over Christmas, you don't play in the colder climates, because even in England, you have an increase of cancellation of Premier League matches because of snow. I mean,
they're already talking about a winter break for the Premier League anyway.
Right, they're talking about a winter break. You see, Russia plays on a completely different schedule because of their winter anyways, so you already have these little derivations, so why not just have things and adapt certain things around it?
Doesn't Bundesliga take a longer break than everybody else? Most of the...
They take like a 6-week break.
Yeah. I mean, so... That's... So what? It would start... When? It would start back when? Like at so we'd go February to December now, or March to December instead of...
Probably closer to March
to
December. Yeah, probably closer March to December.
Yeah, that would be certainly funny if everybody keeps saying, okay, the MLS needs to get into the international calendar, and instead it's, oh, well, everybody's just going to conform to the MLS calendars.
See, then that's step one. Then step two is the yellow lines and shootouts. Step three is the countdown clock. Before you know it, I'm just saying there are a lot of things that are within the realm of reason now. They're being talked about. They're being discussed. They have been discussed. And the funny thing is, we didn't even start it.
Right. Yeah.
You can't blame Americans for this one.
Well, speaking of Americans, let's get back to the American League for one last time before we get out of here. Rachel, you had the Columbus Crew
I sure did. And I have to give a shout out to the Columbus Crew because they are in a very good standing with me because they are the MLS affiliate of my Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So shout out to Marshall Hollingsworth, Christian Martinez, and all the other guys who came to the Riverhounds last season. I'm actually really going to miss them. So they sent one of their best defenders to Atlanta, and they got some pretty good allocation money from it. They sent Michael Parkhurst down to Atlanta, and I don't think the dollar sign was released, but from what I heard, it was pretty hefty. They had a couple rumors.
I always find that weird that MLS won't disclose the money. Like,
yeah,
why is that a problem? Like, every other league discloses the money.
Well, the thing is, every other league, they're very, or at least try to be open about their financials, and for some reason, MLS, even though they should and they want to be taken more seriously, they don't. Because I see a lot of stuff in transfers for, like, length of time and stuff, it's undisclosed, and it's like, is there something going on that we should know about here?
Well, you know, they have their, like, allocation spots and their whatever, all this little rigmarole of who gets who and how much money the club can put up for a player and all this stuff. And it's just like, my God, let's make it harder for these guys to sign people. Like, that's exactly what you need. I'm sorry, Rachel.
No, you're okay. So there was a bit of a rumor that Edgar Castillo he plays for the national team, the U.S. men's national team, that he would come to the Crew from Monterrey in the Liga MX, but it's just a rumor. There's never been a actual, like, deal about that. But they did exercise some contract options on Nicolai Ness, Dilly Duca, Mohamed Saeed, and my two former Riverhounds, Marshall Hollingsworth and Christian Martinez. They also announced that players were already under contract that were coming back. Two of them also, again, three of them played for the Riverhounds last season in Ben Swanson, Rodrigo Severa, as Zach Steffen. And then the other people that come back are Brad Stuver, Harrison Offal, Waylon Francis, Gaston Siro, Ethan Finley, who's a big name, who's been called into national team camps. Ola Kamara is a big name. Tony Tahkani is a big name. I probably just butchered his name, so I'm sorry. Adam Yon will be coming back. But the club released Chad Barson. They released Steve Clark, Matt Puffisi, and Corey Ash and Cedric Mabuada. And Steve Clark was their starting goalkeeper last year. They had a dismal season, so it wasn't quite shocking that they let him go. In the re-entry draft, they got defender Josh Williams. They signed a Finland international. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I'm going to mess it up so bad. But definitely a big move that they got was Jonathan Mensa. He's an international player for Ghana. He gave the U.S. headaches when they played in that 2014 World Cup game against them. They also got another player from Ghana in midfielder Mohamed Abu. And they also Well, they also signed a defender from Maryland and Alex Krognail. So they have a lot of young guys. They still have room to make roster moves, but they cleared the house out a lot. And a lot of these guys, you know, like I said, there's a lot of these people who played for the Riverhounds last season, and that's just USL action. I can see Christian Martinez starting some games. I don't necessarily know about Marshall Hollingsworth. I think he's good enough, but can he start a game? I don't know. And he's also a player that, you know, when he played for the Hounds, he started out as a left midfielder, but then they moved him to left back. So he's kind of like Fabian Johnson in a way. He's playing all these different positions. So it really all depends. I think people need to pay attention to the signings coming up for them, because nothing has been very impressive for them as of late.
So what do you think about Columbus as far as what they could do this season?
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
Poor Columbus Crew fans, once again, having to wait on their team here. So, I mean, you know, that new ownership, at least trying to get things moving with them and clearing house. But you never know. You know, sometimes chemistry happens and you go on a run and you make it. There's always that chance there. So the last team we're going to cover here is the New York Red Bulls. They were the first team in the Eastern Conference last year. Just based off of their attacking prowess, they should probably be right in the mix again, because you still got Bradley Wright Phillips, who barely edged out Kai Kamara and David Villa for the Golden Boot last year. And, you know, Sasha Kljestan led the league in assists, has basically turned his career around coming into MLS and really adapting into that, being that attacking, that just creative midfield guy, which, you know, if you watched him on the recent U.S. games, you kind of saw him doing that first one against Serbia. They kind of followed the same thing as the Columbus Crew. They went and signed a bunch of guys from Cameroon, center back. They went and got a forward, Antonelli Abang. Sorry if I totally just butchered that name, but it's going to happen. They got him on loan. They went and got Amin Murillo to play, defender. So, I mean, they got some decent backups there, but obviously they're going to have to take some time to get used to the league and everything. The biggest loss for them is obviously the big trade to, which I think alarmed everyone, because I think he got married, Dax McCarty, and then next week after that he finds out he's going to the Chicago Fire. And
then he had to go to U.S. National Camp.
Right, exactly. Poor guy. So
no honeymoon for you.
No honeymoon for him, but at least it's, it's preseason. I'm sure he got his honeymoon in at some point, or maybe he will at a later date. But he's been a big key cog for the Red Bulls in past seasons, and it's going to be interesting to see who steps up. Felipe had kind of embraced that role for the Red Bulls, because they tried to make him, the typical Brazilian guy, go attack on the field, and then they found out, oh, wait, he's actually a pretty good holding midfielder. So perhaps they felt that with Felipe there, that Dax was a little bit of expendable. You got one of the best goalkeepers in the league, and Luis Robles back there, so you know that you got that covered. I think defensively you're still worried a little bit about New York Red Bulls. That might be their weakness, of course, barring injury to anybody big. And they were able to keep Aurelien Collin, but, the problem with Aurelien Collin is that he gets a little dirty. He had the most yellow cards out of anybody in the league last year, 14. And he got sent off twice, too. So, I think Jesse Marsh, this second season, for all the talent he had and being able to take him to the playoffs last year in his first season, that's an accomplishment. I think this year you're expecting more out of them. They definitely should make the playoffs. This is another team that I think the fans are expecting conference champion, at least conference finals run, if not MLS Cup run for the Red Bulls. But, you've got some powers over there in the East you got to deal with. So I think they make the playoffs. I think they're going to fall short again. So, but unless anybody else has anything to add here, I think that's going to do it for us this week. So next week, we haven't decided on the teams yet, but we'll have another 7 teams to talk about as we continue our previews. And then we'll have to figure out that last week where we want to do a second show so that we can, our last Sunday before the season starts, we can do just big, where we make all predictions and all that stuff on the season preview. But
ooh, boy.
That's, wait for us to be totally wrong on that.
I don't know. I mean, given me in predictions, I'm only half crazy. Only half.
Yeah, we'll get to make some bold predictions in there, too, so I want to see what Eric has to predict.
Can't wait.
But, all right. And, go ahead, sorry.
I said it'll be lit.
Exactly. Eric, for Eric and for Rachel, for myself, everybody enjoy your soccer. MLS is in full-blown preseason right now, so if you have MLS Live, I think you can watch all those preseason games. You know, it's only $80 for the whole year, so I still don't think that's too bad. Of course, hopefully one of these days MLS will figure out how to make this more of a national thing and not so much of a regional thing, so you don't have these blackouts, which are annoying.
I'm sure they'll be consulting with the NFL at some point.
Yeah. Hopefully, anyway. You know, with these TV ratings, that's the thing. Like, have y'all seen the schedule for the TV?
Yeah.
Like, they changed everything around this year, and that was the thing that they were saying. Oh, we're not doing that. This contract, we're keeping everything the same. And then this year, it's like ESPN has a bunch of Friday games, and then Univision has the Saturday, Sunday stuff, and it's like, okay, we're just moving stuff around.
Looking through what games drew a lot with what networks last year, I'm like, yeah, they're going to be making a lot of tweaks. A lot of tweaks. Not to mention, like, Friday and Saturday games. You remember, you're going into the summer. People, like maybe one or two of us, on occasion, like to go out and celebrate in a festive atmosphere and imbibe. I wouldn't always encourage it, but I understand that it happens. I think as TV networks with MLS, they understand that as well.
I mean, let's be honest, the ratings haven't been good. So it's, as this season's going to be big for them as far as see if these changes do anything, because, you know.
Especially taking advantage of bigger markets. I would love to see how Atlanta does.
What they did this year is that they did the traditional, more traditional American thing. Instead of doing it by market, they did it by how popular the team is. So, like, Seattle and Portland are going to be on TV a heck of a lot more than some other teams. Orlando's going to be on TV, I think, like 10 times because they have Kaká. And Atlanta's going to be on TV a bunch because they're expecting that fan base to explode and really watch that team. So, you know, this is going to be one of these years that they're tinkering a lot. So let's see what happens. But we'll probably get to talk about that more as the weeks go on. Until next week, everybody, we will see you later.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.